Blog Talk Radio.
Tricky morning trying to get logged in. We are supposed to be talking today with entrepreneur, educator, and she's just, wow, she's got a multitude of gifts and awards. Her name is Dr. Valerie Whiting. Valerie?
Yes. Hi, Barrett. Good morning.
Hi.
Afternoon.
Oh, boy. Your afternoon. It was such a time. Oh, my goodness. You wouldn't believe what I had to do. Oh, boy, it's a good thing for all the little apps on the phone.
I know. I was like, I wonder if I got the wrong day.
No, didn't have the wrong day or a wrong time or anything. I had to come in, I had to actually go to another app and come in the back and dial that. It was really weird. I couldn't come in directly through Blog Talk Radio. So.
Yeah.
Dr. Valerie Whiting, it has been really exciting to get to know a little bit about you. We are commonly connected through a network of women who are showing some of their entrepreneurial skills through online teaching. And you are doing, you've put up some courses in one area. And it's an area related to what I think you've done as your main job. So it seems like this has been, your entrepreneurship has at this point been more of a side hustle. So tell us about what you've been doing professionally and where that has led you to now.
Okay. Well, professionally, I started out more than 30 years ago. One of my first teaching jobs was at the May Institute for Autistic Children in Chatham, which was a very small school but has become a worldwide organization now. And I just fell in love with population of people. And I enjoyed my work a lot. I did a lot of research. I continued my schooling, went on, got my master's degree in education, and then got my doctoral degree in human service management. And I've kind of worked in a few different fields in human services. Well, I started out in autism back in the late 70s, early 80s. I also went on to work in acquired head injury, and I have also worked in with developmental disabilities. And so I have kind of run the gamut as far as all the different kinds of training and people that we support here in my position currently, where I am the Director of Training and Staff Development for the Massachusetts Department of Developmental Services. And originally, this particular position I took 10 years ago in 2004, and I took it knowing that I was going to be engaged in promoting learning and for the individuals who work with the people that we support, and also providing learning opportunities for the people that we do provide supports for. And those were people with developmental disabilities. But over the last few years, laws have changed a lot and things have changed. And one of the interesting things that has happened to us as an organization is that we have become the individuals to provide support to adults with autism. And a lot of people don't really understand or look at me with a kind of odd look when I talk to them about that, because I say, yeah, children grow up. You know, they still have autism. It's a lifelong disability. And it's still something that has to be worked with continuing into adulthood. And so I'm really been ecstatic about this because this was my first love. And so I've been doing a lot of online learning opportunities for people. Through my position with the department, I was able to start a website called www.ddslearning.com. And on that website, I provide all free. Everything's free on the website. It's all kinds of free resources, online learning opportunities, books, videos, all kinds of things on many different developmental disabilities, from autism to acquired brain injury to PWS, which is also called Prader-Willi syndrome. And we talk a lot about various things of helping to support people with real life, providing employment opportunities, working on, you know, becoming adults and moving through the world as an adult. So I always wanted to teach online. I love teaching. I love standing in front of people. I love being the center of attention. And I fell into teaching online on my website, and then fell into Udemy. And so once I discovered it, I was like on fire. I was so excited to be able to do something. And I just love providing people with different information and giving them resources. And I love doing research and seeing what's out there and seeing what's new and what can I do to help people and where can they go for information. And as the director in our department here in Massachusetts, we're the largest employer in the state of Massachusetts, actually the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And we have so many resources that people don't even know about. There's a lot of things online. There's a lot of things that you wouldn't know unless you knew someone in the system, so to speak. And that's
right.
What I really wanted to do through my online learning opportunities was give people this information so they have it themselves, so they can go and explore and see what's out there for their loved ones. So that's how it came about.
Okay. All right. So, yes, as Valerie mentioned, she had a course on a platform. At the URL udemy.com, and that is where you can find the course that she teaches. Valerie, what is the name of your course?
I actually have three courses online right now. The three courses that I have are, one of them is, I just kind of was working with titles and names today too, so I want to make sure I get my titles correctly. One is Autism, Five Strategies for Educating Your Family and Friends. And that class has a lot of information that people don't normally find by just doing website, Google searches and things like that. My second class is called...
You've done the work.
What's that?
You've done the work so that they don't have to.
Yes, very much so. Second class is called 10 Strategies to Teaching an Inclusive Classroom for All Students. And it's about working with individuals who have autism in your classroom. Nowadays, so many teachers have individuals with various abilities in their classrooms. And teaching is not what it used to be. We need lesson plans, and we need behavior plans, and we need all kinds of different things. And it's very hard for teachers to stay abreast of all the different various methods to teaching folks. And one method that we use here in Massachusetts that's very prevalent and that I hope to provide more information on my class as well is positive behavioral supports. And in the class, in the school systems, they're calling it PBIS. And that's really, you know, understanding what the behavior is that people are exhibiting and why they're exhibiting those behaviors and how we can help them so they don't have to necessarily act out or cry or shout or get out of their desk or whatever it might be, so we understand their behavior better. And so this this class provides a lot of resources and information for teachers about working with children with autism and children without autism as well, because they can be used across the board. And it also provides some other things about, like, sensory issues. A lot of children with autism are very sensitive to light. So I know that teachers say don't wear your hat inside the room or the house, but in some cases it's needed just to get a child to be able to understand and be able to think more clearly in a classroom. Some little tips and things that you can change that can greatly enhance somebody's life and learning opportunity. And then the third one is called 10 Strategies Taking Family Members with Autism on Vacation. And that has a lot of information about things that you can do to prepare the individual with autism to take a flight or take a vacation. It's very difficult for people with autism to experience change. And any kind of change can create a change in their behavior and make things difficult for everyone. And it talks about how you can do this, different things that you can do, such as role-playing or storytelling, how you can show someone pictures of where they're going to go and what's going to happen to them. That's the one thing that's really important to individuals with autism, is that they're prepared and they have an understanding of what is going to happen next. Surprises don't work well with individuals with autism. They just don't. So being really prepared and having things well thought out is really helpful.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit more about listening, because something that you mentioned there sort of touches home with me. So we are talking with Dr. Valerie Whiting. I'm Barrett Clemenson-Powell, your host for Live with Barrett, and we'll be back in about 90 seconds to talk a little more about it. Hello and welcome back to Live with Barrett. I am your host, Barrett Clemenson-Powell, and we are speaking with Dr. Valerie Whiting, who is a specialist in the field of learning disabilities and things like autism. Valerie was talking with us in the first part about her background and how she professionally developed and what she's doing now to turn that into a sort of a side hustle, can become a full-time job in itself through online teaching, taking what she knows and developing it into strategies for people to be able to use for adults and children. And Valerie, there's something that you said. There's something that you said, Valerie, about being able to have an inclusive classroom. And I want to talk with you a bit about that, and we won't get into a big fight about it, but I really want to ask about this, because I have had opportunity to experience that myself from the teacher, and I really, it sort of blew my mind. I was doing substitute teaching, and
it was very different from the classrooms that I've experienced myself as a student. It was sitting in elementary school with a classroom full of students who really needed to be in, they needed to be in another grade. They had already grasped everything. They were smarter than the rest of the class, and I could see it, and they were bored. And the rule was we had to tell them to sit and read. Then you had kids who had not grasped what they needed from the class. For example, they couldn't add and multiply, so they were unable to do the mixed fractions that I had to teach them that day. So then that was there to deal with. And then there were children who they were called special needs. There was no special needs track, I guess I would say, as there used to be when I was in elementary school, not so long ago. And they were mainstreamed into the class. And quite honestly, every single class that I had, these children were having such difficulties that they were the kids who constantly out of their seats, constantly, there was always some sort of difficulty or behavioral problem. And I spent them, to be honest, I would say I spent 98% of my time dealing with behavioral issues that got to be extreme, not just the kids with the autism, though, or other learning issues, but I would say just 98% behavioral issues. Only about 2% was actual teaching, and that was really, really difficult. So can you kind of speak to that? How is this, how is anyone learning in this kind of atmosphere?
Yeah, it's not an easy, situation by any stretch of the imagination. One of the interesting things about positive behavior supports is that it's evidence-based practice now, and we know that an individual's behavior is saying something to us. I called into your show the other day to speak to one of your other guests.
Patricia
and I was
Bell.
Saying at that time. Yes, Patricia. And I was saying, people cannot not communicate, and they're going to communicate in whatever means they can. And some can communicate in ways that we really don't understand, and we don't know why they're communicating that way. They could be getting up in and out of their seats. They could be hitting the child next to them. It could be lots of various reasons for this. And if you have a long enough amount of time that you can sit and really get to know the individual, then you can start to figure out why that behavior is occurring. Now, I'm not saying that all behavior can be, so to speak, cured with positive behavior support. I'm saying that it works. It's very effective with working with all children in the classroom. There are children that can actually learn and are still listening by walking around the classroom. For my son, for instance, sitting in a seat in the classroom was the worst thing for him. And yet I forced him, or they forced him at the school system for years and years and years. My son ended up dropping out of school. Then he went back, got his GED and his college degree in 3 years because he knew what he wanted to do. He had matured enough. He knew how to do things. And he was very bright. It's just could not do what most normal classroom situations require us to do. But how many of us can really sit still for 6 hours of the day? Even just taking a class as an adult nowadays, when I'm teaching, I make sure that I give people breaks. We have enough self-control that we can get up and go use the restroom if we need to. If we're bothered by a person who's sitting next to us with perfume, we can move to a different seat. If the light overhead is very distracting to us, we can do something about it. If we can't hear properly or if the noise level is bothering us, we know enough to speak up. Children in a classroom, they're going to act out. They're going to find a way of trying to communicate that they're having a problem. They could be hungry. They could be upset. They could be depressed. They could have, who knows what happened at home right before they came to school. As human beings, we're such complicated animals, and there are so many different variables and things that affect us as people that you just don't know until you really know the person. And one of the things that we've really found in working with individuals with developmental disabilities is we've kind of gone full circle on some things. We've said for a long time, don't get to know the people that you work with because you go on and you work with other people. But we've come to learn that people thrive on relationships. And, you know, being compassionate and sensitive and understanding and ready, really getting to know a person, a child, a person for who they are will give you a much better understanding of what you need to do to support them. Just recently on Facebook, there was something going around where a teacher said to write something, "I wish my teacher knew," and I saw this. Did you see it, Barrett? Going around Facebook?
It
said things like, "I wish my teacher knew that I don't have any friends. I wish my teacher knew that I, you know, don't have a lunch today. I wish my teacher knew that my parents argued before I left for school." There's so many things that can affect a child, in particular, who is learning to self-regulate themselves and then exacerbate it with other things. It's very difficult.
Yes. At the same time, what you're saying, one thing that is very difficult that I would say that I learned from all that is it is just extremely difficult for teachers. They're not just teachers anymore. They have been made totally responsible for the emotional, behavioral aspect of, you know, 20 to 30 children a day in their classroom. Mm-hmm.
They're a parent, they're a teacher,
so
they're a caregiver.
This is a little extreme to me. I just saw everyone was suffering. The kids who should have been progressed to the next grade. And a lot of this I saw, this no child left behind thing. I don't think, to me, and this is my opinion, it may seem very extreme, I think it's a failure. I think it's an absolute failure. I don't think children who can't add and subtract should be pushed forward to the next grade simply in order to get a school some money.
Right.
I don't think that they should be, you know, up ahead because not being able to do that, you can't do mixed fractions. You can't go on to advancement. You simply can't. And the child who's sitting there, who's a grade or two ahead, maybe even three, who knows? You never know what genius you've got there until you actually see what's going on with that child. They're having to sit there and wait for everybody else to catch up. And that in itself can create behavioral problems. That can create some really big issues. And I'm wondering, so how is the child who has developmental disabilities, how are they benefiting from being mainstreamed like that? I mean, what I saw was kids getting 20 minutes in a special ed, special session, you know, called out of the room for that and then sent back to the room. I do understand things like you said about, you know, walking around because I already know about ways we learn. Some of us are connected learners, and we have to be moving. We have to touch, or we have to see, or we have to hear. You know, we have different ways in which we learn, and that's really not an issue. But I just thought, whoa, all this having to deal with the behavioral issues, it's not teaching a battlefield. It's really not productive. I have seen why parents are wanting charter schools. why people are wanting to pull out of public schools because it's just too much. It doesn't help the child with developmental disabilities. It doesn't help the teacher. It doesn't help the children who need to be getting on with learning. Instead
even
of
homeschooling, you know, I mean, being able to provide that for children.
Yes.
It's a great opportunity. It's too bad. It's a luxury, really, to be able to do that because a parent really needs to take that responsibility of doing that. But if you can't, how wonderful to be able to.
Is there support? For example, in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, if someone wanted to do that, can they get grants to do that?
You know, I'm not sure. I tell you, I wanted to homeschool my kids when they were younger, and I thought about it for a long time. I did things a little differently. I had home birth. So, you know, that was a little different here, illegal in the state of Massachusetts. And, you know, we did a lot of nutritional things. But when school time came around, they wanted to go to school. They wanted to be with other children. So, you know, that was fine with me. But I wish I had taken a little bit more time to think about what would have been best for my son instead of necessarily what was best for me at that time. Because I think I would have kept him at home and been able to accomplish so much more with him as a learner I'm very fortunate that he's a reader and he's an avid reader. And not that you could say, hey, just go sit down there and read a book, you know, but that that he's able to learn that way. But you're right. When you have people with developmental disabilities in your classroom, it's very difficult. It's not an easy task at all, let alone just a classroom with, you know, neurotypical children who also have their issues coming into the classroom. Teachers are highly unsupported. Teachers do not get the resources that they need. They don't get the other support from, you know, being co-teachers and having somebody else. It's a long, hard day, a lot of activity, a lot of stress, a lot of moving parts going on. And it's very difficult to keep a handle on the classroom today.
Okay. Well, I want to talk a little bit more about your courses about being a teacher via online learning. So let's do that in a moment. We're talking with Dr. Valerie Whiting. My name is Barrett Clemenson Powell, and this is Live with Barrett. We'll be back in about 90 seconds to talk a little bit about some online learning. Hello and welcome back to Live with Barrett. I'm your host, Barrett Clemenson Powell, and our special guest today is Dr. Valerie Whiting. We've been talking about autism and other developmental disabilities, how we're dealing with it in the classroom, and also about some classes that, or courses rather, that she is teaching online. So I want to talk a little bit more about that entrepreneurial aspect. Valerie?
Sure. Yeah. I'd love to.
So tell me, I mean, how when you are constructing a course, what's your process there for those who might be interested in putting together or just knowing how such a course has been put together?
Well, it's interesting that you would ask that because I'm creating another course. I probably have 15 courses in the wings waiting, you know, and what my process is usually I think about, okay, what would be the next class that would be helpful for people to learn about? And so because I work primarily with adults, I've decided to move more towards helping people with adults who have autism. And so like my next class, I'm really thinking about preparing individuals for work. And so what I do is I toy around with some words and what would be a good idea for a title, and then I do an outline. You know, I write, okay, you know, this is going to be really important. Behavior is going to be important. Social is going to be an aspect. Communication is going to be really important. And I do a very high-level outline and then just kind of fill in the outline. And then from there, what I like to do is I go to PowerPoint and I start the process of what do I want this to look like, you know, how kind of storyboarding it across through the PowerPoint operation of what's this going to be looking like and how is this going to fit together and does this all make sense. And And so that's how I do it. And so far, I've been able to develop three classes that way. Like I said, I'm on my fourth class. So it's fun for me, too. I mean, you really have to spend some time on occasion really sitting down and taking either a day or an evening to say, I'm really going to devote this time to thinking about this process and where I want to go and what do I want to include in this? Because you can't include everything, and you can get very overloaded by the whole process. My husband is a psychiatric nurse, and he works in the evening, so it's actually perfect for me. When I get home from work, I keep on working, and I sit there with that laptop on my lap and TV on in the background, and I proceed to develop where I'm going to go from there. So it's a fun, it's a labor of love. I love, love, love doing this.
Yes, that's, I have found that the women in the network that we are both a part of could say the same thing, that it's very much a labor of love and so many ideas out there. Let me ask you, how many courses are you imagining you're going to put out there eventually?
Right now, and I'm looking at my computer screen, I have 13 courses on my computer screen with titles ready to go. And I have so many more ideas. I actually sat down and did one of those word things, like what words came to my mind, what would be relevant, what would be important. And I overfilled a whole page writing in the you know, margins and up and down and in between words and everywhere else. I look at this and I go, whoa, you know, word search, here we go. And I had lots and lots of ideas and lots of things that I think that I could give to people that would be helpful to them. I'm very fortunate in my position that I do anything from, you know, well, I don't do these trainings, but, you know, I support them and do the logistics for a lot of things, from CPR to leadership training to an autism series. And some of them I do teach myself, and some I make the arrangements for people to come in. And so I get lots of ideas and have lots of things, like not just with the autism, but our department is now the department that supports individuals with acquired brain injury. And before, there was no department that supported folks like that. So that's another whole area. I'm learning a lot more, and I'm fortunate that I worked in that before, so I have that experience as well. And so some of my classes are takeoffs on some of the things that I've learned through the years, and I want to share that information. They could be things like preventing a meltdown in a two-year-old child to, you know, what is autistic culture, to talking about person-centered planning, or how to support an individual with autism to go to college. So I have lots of ideas.
That's fantastic. Had you ever thought that you would develop a business for yourself?
Yes, I did. Isn't that funny? Well, to tell you the truth, I got my PhD online, and this was 2003 when I started, so it was a long time ago. And I remember the way that I did it online, it was really difficult because teaching and learning online was still very new back then. And there were many days of crying and saying, I can't do this, it's too hard, I don't understand. But I stuck at it, and I kept working, and I kept working at it. And I really grew to love online education, and I wanted to bring that to so many people in our department. And when you're in a large state like we are, and it takes a long time to go from side to side to have all these learning opportunities for people. And so one of the classes that I, the first classes that I developed for our department was a very basic class on positive behavioral supports. And really the focus of it was for them to learn the terms, but also learn about using a computer too, because we have people from various countries who come to work for us. We have people of all various grade levels who work, and I want people to learn the tools. And so part of the learning process is learning to use the computer. And that's a big piece of online learning.
So have you seen online learning changing, though, in what is it, in 12 years.
It's changed quite a bit. There's so much more technology. Skyping really wasn't around then. Everything is moving so fast nowadays, and there's, you know, we didn't have smartphones. I mean, we have so many different ways of interacting with people and doing right then and there kind of interactions, you know, responding to a question, referring somebody to an article, or passing on some seminal research from something that, you know of from your past. So it's amazing. I think, I always, after I did my PhD online, which took me 5 years because I did it part-time, and, you know, there's this learning curve with learning to learn online. It's a little different. My goal in life was to retire and, you know, be able to teach on the beach.
Okay, you know, nothing wrong with that.
Computer in hand, right? So, here in Boston, we've been snowed in for so many months, I've been able to get quite a bit of teaching from the snowed in territories here. So,
you have to switch it from teach on the beach to something like grow in the snow or know in the snow.
There you go. Grow in the snow. Have to do another word search, you know. I like that, though. So, yeah, I am. I just love learning, you know. I really love teaching and helping people.
Yeah, if those who are listening haven't already taken an online course, at this point now, I really don't know how things were for online courses in 2003. But now, for example, if you take a course, it has a multitude of things in it, a mashup, a PowerPoint, audio, PDFs, or videos. And those videos can range from, the videos can be made out of PowerPoint slides, or they can be talking head videos, or snippets of other videos, things like that. So there's a multimedia, I guess I could say. And that's what you'll find in online courses now to help you teach in different ways. I know that when I teach my courses, I have online courses, I actually start the course out asking people, what kind of learner are you? And go through the fact that they are somewhat what are called kinetic learners. They have to walk around, and I actually write in it that they have to walk around. That's how they can actually comprehend things, or they have to visualize things, or they have to hear things. You know, there are people who need to, certain learners, they need to repeat what they're reading. They need to say it out loud because they need to hear it, to comprehend it. Those different things like that. So, yes, I am very much aware that there are different learning styles. And I think it's important for people to get a handle on that immediately and not feel that if they can't just sit in the chair the whole time, you know, that they can't. The other great thing I think, with online learning is you can say, okay, you know, I've had enough right now, or I'm really frustrated. There's other things on my mind, and I need to deal with that so I can focus on the learning. And you can turn it off. You can pause it and walk away and come back to it.
Right. You know, my biggest advice for people is just to keep at it, because you can do it. I mean, it's stressful, you know. You're learning. But if you just stay with it, there's so much that you can get out of it. And, you know, like you were talking before about the individuals that are in the group of women that we're working with together or supporting together on Facebook, there's so much to be offered out there, and I've learned so much by my peers now. It's a wonderful, you know, thing to be able to learn new things all the time.
Yes. How has entrepreneurship changed your life?
I don't think it has at all. I don't see how it has changed me at all. The only thing that it's done is it's made me work more. In that, you know, I have a daytime job. I am a full-time director of training and staff development for the Commonwealth. And, you know, I have a 9-to-5 job and, you know, 2-hour each way commute. And then I come home and, you know, I continue to work. But I enjoy it so much that I don't find it work. It's just a passion of mine. So I don't think it's changed me anything at all as a person, except for it's made me more determined and made me.
Well, these are significant things. Saying it hasn't changed you, and they're saying how it's changed you. Those are significant things, to be able to feel more determined, to be able to use that you're taking what is your passion and turning it into something that you love and making money at it.
I love it so much, I don't think of it as, you know, as that. But, yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah, it's really been, like I said before, just a lot of fun to work at and develop things and try to help people. So,
well, I think that's great. Absolutely, absolutely wonderful. Now, how are you making people aware of your courses?
I do a lot of marketing on Twitter right now. Twitter's new. I'm a new Twitter person. I had never done that before we started being part of this group. And actually my daughter said, oh my God, that's not what you want to hear from your parents, is that they're doing Twitter and, you know, making fun of you. But I don't Twitter to any of my children. But really, I just use it, you know, either professional
on Twitter, you tweet. Just so you know, on Twitter, here's the lingo. On Twitter, you tweet.
Oh, we like tweet. I'm such a novice at all this stuff. I'm still learning.
Okay.
So
I'll give you some tips.
Tweeting.
While your daughter's not here.
Yeah.
You go through something in terms of if you're good, like to be good at time management, you can use something called Hootsuite. H-O-O-T, Suite, S-U-I-T-E, Hootsuite.com.
Mm-hmm.
And its symbol is an owl.
Okay.
So you go there, just sign up with your email and a password. You can connect it to your Facebook account. It will ask you to give permission, like you have to give it your URL to your Facebook account. And if you have a page on Facebook, it depends where you're wanting to send your information, directly to your personal page on Facebook, or do you have a business page that you've set up on Facebook? I find it best to some people could do both, or some people just do their business page, you know, because your personal stuff, you want to be able to just have your, you don't want to inundate your family with stuff or friends, you know what I mean?
No, you don't. And you can
direct them on your personal page to, here's the link page if you want to go there and see all my, you know, professional announcements. Then they can do that.
Great.
And they can like your page. But at any rate, so you can fix up Hootsuite. And then what happens is you are able to set up, you can do about 30 days in advance. Maybe you can do a little more tweet. You can set up your tweets. You can actually set them ahead of time. So you may see that I tweet a lot. Well, I'm not sitting there all hours of the day and night tweeting. I've already set them up a month and a half ahead. So, you know, things you want to promote, each one of your courses you want to promote, you might print one fact from a course, just print one fact and then put the link to that course where that information is. And the links you put, and your links can be your links with your discount code, your courses, so that you're getting things like that. So you can set this all up, and you can actually set it up so that it posts to your Facebook, you're automatically posting on Twitter. So you can, just one tweet will go out to all three places. And you can pick the days and times when you want them to go out, 6:06 p.m. on Thursday the 24th or whatever it is.
Nice.
Yeah. So there you go.
Oh, that sounds great. I will definitely check that out.
Now you know how to professionally tweet. to put your courses out there. Do you use LinkedIn?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep,
okay.
I'm on LinkedIn.
That's a place to actually to blog and to send out messages and get them out, especially to your professional network. So let me ask this. This is your side hustle at this point. How is your employer handling your being an online instructor?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question too, because I've been very careful not to mix what I do at work with what I do online for my online courses. For instance, I don't teach with children. We don't provide services for children. We only provide services for adults. So so having class about the inclusion strategies, that's something that I've learned from teaching classes in the past. And so it has nothing to do with what I'm doing in my work, because we don't have classrooms, we don't have teachers, we don't have anything like that. The strategies for the families and friends are strategies that I've just learned about over the years, that I just put a few of them together for a class. And the traveling one really came about because I'm an Army brat and I've traveled all over the world. I have many members of my family that are airline pilots for, like, professional airlines, and I've been able to interview folks and learn a lot about what you can and can't do for airlines and for taking vacations. And I've traveled so much on my own, and having the familiarity with working with individuals with autism, that's how that came to fruition. So I've been real careful to keep those lines separate right now.
Separate.
Okay. I don't want to get into any trouble at work. You know,
I
like my job too much.
Of course.
Yeah.
But remember, I think it's really great to be able to be a Renaissance woman, and I think that's exactly what you're doing. Well, it's been wonderful to talk with you. We've been speaking with Dr. Valerie Whiting. She works with developmental disabilities in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And it has been a wonderful chat about her side hustle, which is teaching online courses about developmental disabilities, particularly about autism, giving you strategies for dealing with it at home and at school. So this has been Live with Barrett. I'm your host, Barrett Clemenson Powell, and I hope that you will join us again tomorrow when we talk with Ines Rowe. Until
thank
then,
you.
I'm so glad you came on, Valerie. Thank you for
thank
coming.
Thank you very much. I appreciate this time very much. Have a great day.
You're welcome. Have a good day, everyone. Bye-bye.